Welcome to Sleeping with Sarah. I'm Sarah Albritton, a narcoleptic comedian, and this is a podcast where I interview people in my bed and we talk about sleep, comedy, or music, and relationships. I'm happy to be part of the Laugh Factory podcast network. This is my 53rd episode, and I interviewed musician, writer, producer, and my friend, Jesse Kreiderman. You can visit jessekreiderman.com for upcoming show dates and tweet and follow him on Twitter at @bifunkalmusic. Jesse is running a kick-ass music festival this weekend in Chicago called Winter Camp Fest at the Logan Square Auditorium, March 17th starting at 7 p.m. and March 18th starting at 5 p.m. And all the proceeds go to the National Endowment for the Arts, so it's a great cause. They got 17 bands playing, art, music, awesome food from Carnival, and I'm giving away 2 free tickets. Tweet Winter Camp Fest to me at Sarah Albritton to be submitted for tickets. You can also visit wintercampfest.com for more information. Sleeping with Sarah is brought to you by Audible.com. Go to audibletrial.com/sleepingwithsarah to get a free audiobook of your choice. This week, I'd like to recommend The Whole Brain Child by Daniel J. Siegel and Tina Payne Bryson. This is a recommendation from Jesse. Again, that's audibletrial.com/sleepingwithsarah. And if you like the podcast, please, please rate and review on iTunes and iHeartRadio. Visit the website, sleepingwithsarah.com, for more info, and follow me on Twitter at Sarah Albritton. I'm super excited to share this podcast with you. Jesse and I talked about everything from not being able to sleep, our shared hatred of daylight savings time, to traveling to other countries to go to their sex museums. Yes, in the United States, we have a creationist museum. In Europe, they have lots of sex and phallic museums. Also, find out how Jesse got Eddie Van Halen approved. And find out how he came from a town in the middle of nowhere, Indiana, that still seems to not have a ton of technology happening for it. And we also talk about creative copyright and music and how that's changing the industry and a bunch of other cool stuff. Really fun conversation, and let's get started with the show. Welcome to Sleeping with Sarah. I'm Sarah Albritton, and this is my guest, Jesse Kreiderman.
Hey, Sarah. How's it going?
Good. How'd you sleep last night, Jesse?
Very not much.
Not much?
Very not much. Very lightly. I slept very lightly.
Yeah? Do you not get a lot of sleep usually?
I generally get less and less as I get older. So right now, I'm averaging 6 hours a night, but last night it was maybe 4 or less.
Oh,
yeah.
Why is that?
Well, I played a show last night. Well, three things happened. Number one, we lost an hour last night because of this amazing thing called daylight savings time.
Yeah.
Which is where we like reinforce the fact that time is a invented construct and we take and give hours at will. So, that happened.
Yeah. Which I think is still ridiculous that we do that.
I do.
Because it's like, we have technology now. It was done for farming and stuff back then, right?
Like, yeah, it was done for farming. Now I think tractors drive themselves. So it's like, yeah, it's like, why do we do that? I don't know. I think there's actually a petition out to do two things at once. Get rid of daylight savings time and then, I can't remember the second one.
I mean, if they're abolishing the EPA, they might as well get rid of daylight savings time.
Right. Like, yeah.
Like, if you're getting rid of, like, longstanding institutions like that, like...
Yeah.
And it's crazy because it's like certain parts of Indiana just don't acknowledge daylight savings time. It's like you drive through. Like, what do people do before cell phones changed automatically for us?
I don't know. They called Mike Pence and he said this area of Indiana is immune to, they passed a law. I actually lived in Indiana, for a short time in my life, in an area that doesn't have addresses. These are two funny facts.
What, wait, an area that it's like, oh, just around the corner from that big, you know,
your name
barn over there.
Yeah. Basically your address is the street intersection in your last name, the closest street. So we lived at 900 South 450 East. Those were the closest streets. And we had a last name, and that's how the mail was forwarded. And then there were only so many phone lines back then that you had what was called a party line. And so it was a traditional, like, wire line, but everyone in the same area had the same phone number. And so you'd pick up the phone. I swear to God.
How old were you?
Look this up. This wasn't a dream. Yeah.
Okay.
Look it up, people on the podcast. Look up party line calling. And not the 1-900 kind.
Like, yeah, it sounds like a different kind of party.
No, this is like the, this is like a sadness rural party. this is like this is the reason they created funding for rural
so
broadband.
Wait, how old were you? Were you like a kid?
I was a child. Yeah, we lived on a farm. My parents were hippie artists, and at one point we're like, hey, let's go buy a farm in the middle of nowhere.
That doesn't surprise me, but I think what would surprise me if they're hippie artists that your name is so like it's Jesse. It's nothing like it's not like
Jessam.
Yeah,
something like that. Or
Sparkland.
Right. Jesse is short for Star Child. So we lived in Indiana, and I do recall, I think we lived in the belt where they didn't do daylight savings time. Mm-hmm. We were supposed to walk, my parents were excited, there was a school down the street. So, we'll get to just walk to school. And then the day before we moved there, they determined that the school was like a toxic threat because of asbestos and lead and everything. And they closed the school down. And so that meant we had to take like a 45-minute bus ride as little kids. And the bus had kindergarten through like college level kids, I think.
What?
Yeah, yeah.
How big were your classes?
I mean, it was South Whitley Elementary was a, kids actually drove tractors to school. This is true. This is a true story. Oh my gosh. I hope my sister hears this. It was in, Kosciuszko County.
That is insane. Yeah, yeah. So how do you go from rural areas to living in the city, like this cool freelance lifestyle where you're traveling?
And I know. Well, it's
hanging
funny.
Out with William. And
yeah,
all stuff.
Yeah. It's funny. My sister and I were just recently in Europe at the same time, and she was in Amsterdam. I was in Lanzarote at the time, which is a Canary island. And we were trying to figure out how we could connect, and it didn't work out. But we were like, we have to be the most well-traveled people from that zip code, like, ever. Like, that Indiana zip, like it's pretty nuts that we, like, kind of, our whole family, all four kids, went to Europe with work somehow this year. So, that was, how did we get there? Oh, man.
Was it just like, I don't want this life. I don't want to live in this farm.
What happened is, I think my dad, like, this is a true story. I think my dad got sick of chopping wood, first of all.
Wait, like, your dad, seriously, to chop wood?
No. Like, these Indiana stories, like, are not, we could just talk Indiana all day. My father had to chop wood because we didn't have a furnace. We had a wood, like, a wood box that you like just threw shit in and lit it on fire. And the top of our house was always freezing cold.
Did you have an outhouse?
We did not have it. We didn't. I mean, we didn't have a formal outhouse. We just had a pit. My mom like did artwork in the top of the house, which was the heat from the wood furnace would only like go up maybe one level. So the top was freezing in the wintertime. We had a kerosene heater that we used indoors, which is terribly dangerous because it like lets out all these chemicals and it stinks. And my mom would like work on artwork from like midnight to 4 a.m. with her hands freezing. I mean, this sounds like a storybook, but it was, and I had my first job then actually as well. My first job was working for a 90-year-old farmer doing odd jobs, and he.
What, when you were like 8?
I was like 8. I was, exactly. I was like 8. My parents were like, go work with Mr. Seiler. He needs some help. Well, the problem is Mr. Seiler had dementia and didn't really know like what era we were in. And so I worked for him all day long, like painting fences and stuff and just like, you know, weird manual labor for a child. And at the end of the day, he gave me a nickel. and so my dad chewed him out and he never worked for him again. That was my first job.
You give me a nickel for working all day for you, I'll never work for you again.
Here's my nice shiny nickel there for you, son.
Yeah. I do gotta ask, why do you have the sunglasses on?
Okay, so this
inside.
Is, yeah, no, I had to do this. In Spain, especially on the Canary Islands, it's sort of this tax-free zone where a lot of things are shipped, and it's literally the cheapest place in the world to buy stuff because nothing has been like taxed by governments yet. It's like pre-tax. It's like the ultimate duty-free place. It's also the best place to get fake shit. So these are fake Ray-Bans, and I bought they look really like not fake Ray-Bans, and I lose sunglasses all the time. You can tell by the weight.
I can't tell because I don't buy designer stuff unless it's like super on sale.
Oh yeah, yeah. No, I lose sunglasses. Like that's a thing I will lose. So I never would pay expensive money.
I never spend more than $20 on a pair of sunglasses.
Yeah, yeah.
Because I will always lose them.
So they had these, and they were selling these on the beach for $8 a piece. So I bought, like, everyone in my family Ray-Bans. I also bought a fake Rolex for $13. Just because. Just that's why.
It's why not? Yeah. Just for fun.
Yeah. So you asked me why I was tired.
Yeah. So do you sleep a lot? Yeah?
No. So I was like, I played a gig last night, and the gig got over at 3 a.m.
What gig?
So I played with a band called Vibe, which is a group of people that I worked with in a very awesome musical on the South Side. It's a theater company. It's primarily an all African American touring theater company. It's one of the there's only a couple in the United States. Yeah. And we did the Ike Turner story. And the guys I met in the musical, we were in the band.
Wait, were you performing in the musical?
Yes. I was. We were on stage. We were like, it was the Eric Turner story, so we were kind of like, we weren't like lead actors or anything, but we were definitely on stage and all part of the thing. Mm-hmm. And then some of the guys I worked with, we all stayed in touch. They're all just phenomenal musicians. So that sort of opened me up to this whole South Side music connection. And I did some work with a gospel church down there, did some work with various different things. And then I worked with these guys last night, and we just brought the house down. It was so much fun. But got home at 3 a.m. My roommate got home at 3:15 a.m. We had to catch up, and before I knew it, it was 6 a.m. And I got up at 10 a.m. So
that's crazy.
That's my night. Yeah.
That's insane. Mm-hmm. That's fun though. I mean,
how about you? Did you get much sleep last night?
I mean, I was out. I got in like at 2, and then I just. I mean, for me, it's like I sleep and like did I sleep or did I watch that movie? You know, it's like I confuse myself. I always get. It's not a problem for me to fall asleep. Like
that's good.
It's what's the narcolepsy? You know.
Yeah.
I can't remember if you've ever seen me have a thing.
I haven't.
No,
I haven't. I kind of have always wanted to.
That's
like in a strange. It's so isn't weird. That bizarre.
People say that to me all the time. They're like, I kind of want. And then when they see it, they're like, oh, that's weird, or that freaked me out, or I'm like, well, you asked for it. You know?
Yeah, you've been waiting to see this.
Well, it doesn't happen as often anymore. Yeah, but yeah. I mean, like maybe like once a month. But like at the peak in high school, it happened like 3 times. Times a day.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah.
Can you tell if it's happening?
Yeah, like, I can, but I can't communicate it. But people that know me well,
they can
see it. Yeah. So like my ex, he used to be able to catch me when he could see it happening.
Will you fall over?
Yeah, I fall to the ground.
Oh my God. You literally just fall asleep like that.
Yes. It's called a cataplexy, and it usually happens at heightened emotions, or if I feel really like angry or really like strong emotions, or I've done it when I've laughed so hard. Sometimes when I hold in a laugh or something like that.
Oh my gosh.
But it's never happened on stage, so.
I was going to say, do you talk about it in your stand-up?
Yeah, that would absolutely be a good thing. Yeah, I talk about my stand-up, and that's a decent part of my stuff. So yeah, it's just, it's something weird. It's something that I do.
Yeah.
But the cool thing is I'll naturally hallucinate, and there's other possibilities.
Oh, wow. Yeah. That's so interesting. Yeah, it's fascinating. I you're the first person I met. I've known you for a few years, and you're the first person I met that I personally know that has been dealing with narcolepsy, and I've been fascinated by that. Like, it's just fascinating to me. Yeah, it really is.
Well, I mean, I think everyone has some weird sleep stuff, and I think it kind of correlates to as creative people. I think most creative people have something strange with their sleep patterns, and I think it somehow informs what they do during the day.
Oh yeah. And the thing is, like, for me, when I'm really inspired, like sleep is sort of this thing. I do like to sleep. I am not. It's not that I don't enjoy relaxation, but like if I'm on a tear, if my mind's really in a great space, and I'm on a great creative journey, or I'm inspired.
Like writing a song.
I look for those moments where time disappears, and when that happens, I might not look at the watch until it's 6 a.m.
And that's the kind of good time disappearing, not the bad time, the daylight savings time.
right. Back to daylight savings time. Yeah. I'm my own Indiana.
And you, just so that everyone knows, like, you're kind of a Renaissance man in a sense, right?
I guess
you're a musician.
I am.
You play guitar.
Yeah. I play guitar, sing, play bass. I teach those instruments.
I also
write. Yep, I write professionally. I write for us. I do different. I actually do some photography as well. My dad's a photographer. I do, I would say that's a pretty fair assessment. I mean, I stay busy.
That sounds pretty Renaissance, but
yeah,
you know.
Yeah. So like right now you asked me, we were talking about traveling earlier.
Yes.
So, I was just in Iceland, which is the first country to vote in gender equality for pay.
I saw that. Yeah? I was so excited about that.
So I was so surprised by Iceland. I was coming from a different island that was warm. And so at first I got there and I was like, it's cold and I want to be on the beach still. But Iceland's actually relatively warm. That's the unknown. Like, you can't go skiing there. There's mountainy areas, but there's not like ski resorts and stuff. There's only 300,000 people that live there. And the gender parity is really cool for like culturally. Mm-hmm. You can sense it. It affects their sense of humor, their just everything. They have a very sarcastic, funny. Everyone speaks English, really, really good English.
Yeah.
They're very funny in English. They don't just speak English. You know, they're comedic and they've got an amazing, like, music and art is very, like, deeply ingrained in their culture. It's terribly expensive. I paid $75 for a iPhone charger accidentally.
Oh, so it's very expensive.
There's that, yeah. And I was, like, doing the math wrong, the conversion, and this is at the end of, like, 10 days of traveling, so it's probably pretty stupid for me to, like, have a beer and then go try to buy things. they have the Icelandic phallic museum, which was very fascinating.
Oh, that's interesting. I have been to the Prague Sex Machine Museum.
Oh, Sex Machine Museum. Okay.
Yes.
So how far back do those go?
They have wooden machines that were like wooden dildos and like that were peddled. Like some people like this is back in like the day.
Yeah.
Like these are back in hysteria days.
Right. Where it was like treated. Like
the treatment. Like, God. Yeah, of course. I would pretend to have hysteria so that they could treat me with having orgasms. Yeah, of course.
That sounds pretty rough. Yeah.
But I saw one of the first silent porns ever made. It was like a silent movie porn from like the 1920s.
Oh my goodness.
And it was really comical because back then, women that were overweight were considered beautiful because they had enough money to feed themselves.
Right.
So it was all these super skinny dudes and these bigger women. And they would have a soundtrack that was comical. Like when he's trying to like get it up, it's it's just the most comical thing ever.
That's so funny. And that was at the Prague, the one in
Prague Machine Museum, yes.
Wow, that's hilarious.
Sex Machine Museum. Yeah, but what was the phallic museum
about? The phallic museum was pretty funny. There's three things that I took away from it. I was expecting something. There's a sex museum in Amsterdam I went to, and that was more like sort of the history of sex, and it's not a true museum. Like, it's like an attraction. You know what I mean? It's the phallus place was actually insane. They have preserved like the penises of like every animal.
That's so weird.
I saw like a sperm whale's junk and it was like in a tube. It was very crazy.
Wait, who collects these?
Who's like, hey,
you know what? I'm just going to find every animal. I'm going to be like, no one is art except just take all the dicks off.
Yeah, I'm just like a dick collector. That's my professional dick collector. Yeah. This guy who started it, so I actually do know the story. So another name for a penis is, I guess, a pizzle is,
I'm going to start using that. A pizzle?
No, like, look up pizzle, like do the etymology on pizzle. It's really funny. And, they used to make whips out of bull pizzles. And,
there's, rawhides.
Yes.
For dogs. Yeah, they're made out of bull dicks, right?
They do that. Yep. They do make like pizzle hides. And, So a lot of times your dog is actually eating a bag of dicks. That's true. this guy in Iceland was given a bull pizzle and he found that very funny. And then also being like an Icelandic guy, he was like, he was just honestly curious about this stuff. And so people knew he had that, and other people started giving him, like, he would talk about it in conversation, I guess, and other people would say, like, oh, like a scientist would, like, give him a mole dick or
something. People just started sending him dicks.
Yeah. No, and then it, like, I found out, for instance, like raccoons and animals from, like, the certain kingdoms actually have like a dick bone and, like an actual bone. So they, like, I don't know, there's all this, but then this is the crazy part. It wasn't like all that. That was very scientific, and like everything is like encased in chloroform, and it's like kind of creepy. It looked like something from like American Horror Story. But the thing that was nuts is actual human beings. You know how you can donate your organs?
Mm-hmm.
From multiple countries have donated their junk, and the donation letter is on the wall, like, you know, me being of sound mind and body, like, hereby donate
my penis to science.
Yeah. Yeah, to the Icelandic.
So you can actually do that?
Like, I guess.
I have a question on your will. Are you gonna say, hey, I'd like to donate my dick to the Icelandic?
You know what, you know, it's really funny, the thought, just as sort of a funny parting gift to my van, or parting thing, I think it would be sort of funny to do something like that. Maybe not. I don't know.
Well, it's like how Carrie Fisher wanted her ashes in a big Viagra pill.
Like, I love it.
It was a big pill. It was awesome.
I kind of like these ideas of going out with a sense of humor.
Well, dad wants to do, he discovered that there's this thing where you can have an artificial coral reef that helps build the coral reef.
Of your ashes?
Yeah. No. So what you do is your ash. So it's an artificial reef, but it helps build the coral reef. And so what you can do is you can select a section. He wants to do a section of our family off the coast of Cocoa Beach in Florida. And he, like, so it would be, you'd have your ashes and, like, part of it, but then you could have your family all connected.
Okay.
And because he's from Panama, so he's very connected to the ocean.
So cool.
So he wants to do that. And then we'd have a plot. We'd have an area. So instead of going to, like, a graveyard and sad music.
Yeah.
Get out on a boat and out on a boat and visit our family.
No, that's beautiful. And like, that is so beautiful. So I've seen the thing. So where they do coral rebuilding in some areas that don't do a lot of dives, that's like a thing you can donate. And I know exactly what you're talking about, but it wasn't incorporated with ashes.
Yeah.
So that you can buy these like things that are like formed, concrete forms or whatever, but they do that. They help the reef come back.
The thing is that all these things, like, you know, all the baby boomers are really interested in trying to find ways that aren't going to be, you know, environmentally detrimental. Because honestly, there are more people alive today than have ever died in the history of the world. Like, that's like the truth.
No.
And so, like, it's not logical for us to keep burying people in the ground because there's just not going to be enough space.
No.
Honestly, if I knew I had a piece of land I would have for the rest of my life, I would just have it as part of a maybe be a tree or something.
A tree, that's cool.
But
yeah.
I don't know if I'll be that. But I really like the coral. If my dad does a coral reef idea, I'll stick with that. But I love it because we'd know exactly where it is, you know, and you could have just kind of a fun moment or thing with it.
Have you heard about like the diamonds that you can make?
So
I was curious what you think about that. So you can have an artificial diamond made of your ashes, and then like you can like give it to somebody. But then I was like kind of thinking like it just kind of it's very interesting. It's a little bit creepy. Like I don't know. And then there's the whole collect, you know. But they can compress it, and then actually people do it with their pets.
Okay.
Yeah. So this like brooch is like, you know, Fido.
Well, I have a couple cousins that they do these teardrops. So when they're like these teardrop necklaces.
Oh, like have I thought you meant like a teardrop.
No, they didn't. They're, right. My cousins are crazy. That's not the cousin that's in jail. All right.
Teardrops.
Anyway, so her and her family, they did ashes, but they would put a little bit of ashes into these teardrop necklaces so they could wear them when they wanted
to. That's cool.
But it was like kind of an option, so they could still have them around.
Yeah. Yeah, I like that kind of thing. I'll tell you a funny story about cremation, and it has, again, to do with pets. leave it to the United States to come up with every way to monetize things.
Yeah.
You know? And not only just monetize it, but we're really into like tears.
Mm-hmm.
Like we're really in TIERS, like into you know, economy for, you know, multiple.
Yeah, everything it's I've like, seen. Hey, this is the bronze package, yeah, the yeah, silver package, yeah, the gold black, package. Yeah, yeah.
Like concerts, like there's it used to be selling used to up. Be it used yeah. to be just like a ticket. Now it's like the ticket or the VIP pass, or you get to like stand on the side of the stage for extra money,
or you could do a meet and greet after the show.
All this stuff, we've got all these ways of, you know, so even goes down to. My girlfriend's at the time, her cat passed away. It was very, very tragic. This cat lived to be like 15 and was the most loving cat ever. And it was, I've never seen her so sad. It was a very sad moment. We took the cat to the vet and we were kind of discussing options and, you know, wanted to have the cat cremated, and they give you several options. Mm-hmm. Varying price tiers. The lowest, there's the like individual cremation where you get, and that's the most expensive. It's like maybe $500. And then you get like a packet of like your pet's ashes. But I guess running crematoriums is expensive. So normally they just throw a bunch of animals in a bucket and like do it. And for like $100, you get a box of ashes that includes your pet, but also probably some other pets. Mm. And I was like, What a strange thing to even do.
Well, my cat died. She's 21 years old and she died.
Whoa.
She lived for a really long time. Yeah.
It's amazing.
And I don't know why, I came home and, you know, to visit my parents, you know, she's still with my parents. Yeah. It was crazy. Calico. Yeah. Great. You know?
Yeah.
But my parents had like a little like vase and they had like a printed paw print.
Yeah. The paw print.
Like,
yeah.
And all that. Yeah. And I don't know how much that cost, but I was like, that's so sweet that you did that, but yeah. I'm not going to take it with me to Chicago. I'll keep it at home.
Right. Yeah.
I mean, I love the cat. Yeah. Don't get me wrong, but.
Yeah. No, we got the paw print. Was all I got that, but it was just interesting. I guess there's, and I wonder if they do that with people. But
so, do you think that the area in Indiana is still not affected by like technology nowadays?
You know, that's a really good question because I feel like I did visit the area recently with my family. We drove through, and the farm we lived on burned down, was gone.
Oh,
so
was that through a party? You think?
I have no idea. Yeah, it was too much of a party line. I just couldn't handle it. You know, it would depend on if they build towers for. This is actually for my side writing career. This is a big story. It's about how rural America is served by communication systems because it doesn't make financial sense for companies like Comcast and Verizon to build towers and, you know, like lay cable for so few people.
But maybe they're the safest because people aren't looking into their shit.
That's right. That's right. You know,
everyone needs to have like a shack out in Indiana or something like where they can hide all their shit because like it's all safe. They know that no one's watching or looking at it.
The best place to put your stuff, everyone, if you're looking to hide things, Kosciuszko County, Indiana. Yes, indeed. Yeah.
I mean, I recently heard that the guy that invented the World Wide Web has decided that it like might be like getting too almost evil for what its purpose was.
Sure. I mean, you know, I think it's the World Wide Web and the whole internet phenomena has sort of become its own science fiction story in a really interesting way.
Yeah.
So kind of some of the things that have happened are really cool that we couldn't have expected. And some of them are very much like dystopian, like, you know, like online bullying and things like these are things we didn't really expect when we thought, hey, if we connect everybody, this will be really cool.
But nowadays, like with every invention, I feel like you got to almost play devil's advocate and figure out what's the worst thing that could happen with this.
Yeah, right.
Like I know Einstein had big regrets about...
True. About nuclear research. Yeah, that's a good point. Well, there is actually a collective of very smart people that includes Bill Gates and Elon Musk, who does
Tesla.
And he's
building a tunnel under LA.
Yeah. So there's a collective of very smart folks who are putting out a collective warning toward the development of artificial intelligence and warning about how we approach future technology. And that's sort of a bit, you know, this answers your question. And these are people that are, you know, that's sort of that Einstein effect. I think they can see futures that maybe we are not considering yet. And they're like, if we don't
watch this.
Humanize this now. There could be some scary stuff in our future.
It's really interesting to think about her, and also there's a really good
BJ. Oh, I love that film.
Yeah, but BJ Novak has a really cool book of short stories, and and I've listened to the audiobook of it just because I love hearing the different voices he uses.
Yeah,
because he has other people like Rainn Wilson and like Lena Dunham and like other people like add in voices, Mindy Kaling. But what was really cool is one of the longer short stories he does. It's like a longer one, but it's about how a guy returns a sex doll because it falls in love with him. And he's like, I know this is the first artificial intelligent thing to like to fall to that's capable of love, and I'm getting made fun of because I returned it.
Right.
But it's like, that's not what I ordered. like I don't want her crying after sex.
That's so terrible. I know. It's like so funny and tragic and all of it.
I definitely recommend that book.
Sounds great.
But it's really interesting and how that will change with music. Like now that you can randomize things.
Right.
Computers can randomize music. Like, are the computers the creation? Are the people that write the program? Are they the composers? Where does that...
We get into this... Yeah, we're literally going through this right now, which is, like, how we define, like, copyright law, the way we manage that, and that, like, you know, like, what is the intellectual property, and what stuff is yours, and what stuff is public domain, and what stuff can be... Those laws are very murky. So even in, like, software, I work with a software company, and we do tech stuff. That's what I was... we were talking a little bit about my trip to Spain and like what we're working on with Will.i.am and stuff. This software, it's very murky on like what you can consider to be intellectual property and yours and what is just like a cool idea. Well, and you know, we're trying to figure that out.
Even something like the voice adjustments and microphones, like is that still considered like in terms of the copyright for the song? Is that still you know? And it's also different things. Like as a scriptwriter, like if I write a script and then we film it, like the filming of it, the DP, the other people involved, that changes the content of what we've created. That's creating a new thing. So who owns that? And it's very interesting to me because I clearly want to protect what I have.
Exactly. So like a screenplay. So if you have a lot of times that there's this, I know only a slight amount of this just from working with other writers. So it's sort of like, okay, I might have written a great novel. Mm-hmm. And then there's someone who does a screenplay adaptation, which is another thing.
But they still have to get the rights
They have to get the rights from me. The screenplay then includes all the directorial notes and all that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. The screenplay sometimes, for instance, one of the greatest, everyone should look this up, Lawnmower Man, was a Stephen King short story, and I think it was when he was writing as Richard Bachman, which was one of his pseudonyms. And it's a very short story, and it's very, Stephen King-esque. It's kind of like creepy and whatever. Mm-hmm. He auctioned the rights to the name. He was very popular at the time, so anything Stephen King, I think It was a TV series at the time, is very popular. They made a film out of it, Lawnmower Man, and it's nothing, the screenplay is literally, except for the name, is virtually unlike the thing at all.
That's what bothers me about some things. Like, that's why I appreciate certain people having more control over their work. Like J.K. Rowling, like, she's been very specific. She's like, I don't want American actors. I want British actors that only, and these are the things that I want. I want to have approval over things. And I think that...
Yeah.
And some writers, some of the best screenplays are when the writer adapts his own screenplay. Like Closer. Closer was a play.
That's right.
And then that became into a movie. And that was adapted, I think, by the person who wrote it. Or they consulted or something.
Exactly.
And also, the thing that bothers me is also with all these, like, comic book things. Like, they have all the rights. So, like, I wonder, like, if I wanted to write about Thor, the Norse myth...
Mm-hmm.
Is that still like not allowed because it's so similar to the comic book or
it
not?
Depends.
Like that's like
I would venture to say it all depends how many people listen to you.
Yeah.
The bigger it's kind of a dark opinion, but they care to the point where they feel like they're losing money.
Yeah.
And then at that point, then they might go after you. If they won't go at with some exceptions, I just feel like they don't go after stuff unless they think there's like a pot of gold at the end of the rainbow, you know? That's a good point, that the adaptations of the comic books, that's a huge, So I do think this. I think there's several layers of how all these things come to be. And some of those are driven by like one creative force, right? Someone who sees the whole way through, maybe knows some financiers so they can kind of be the single voice. And that sometimes happens later in someone's career. Once they've been a writer, then maybe they've been a director. Then finally they can do like the whole thing, right? Like, right? And then other people are lucky. But the path from the written word to the screen is so circuitous and wild. I think most people don't understand how many things happen and how much stuff changes on the
way. And how many times things are made or filmed or worked on for years. Worked on for years and it never sees the light of day.
Yeah, so much.
And it's so, that's what I love. One thing I do love about web platforms like Vimeo and YouTube is that people can put their stuff out there the way, even if it's low budget, the way they intend to. So that way the studios don't fuck it up.
Yeah.
Because like this new web, this new show, Powerless, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So I watched the pilot and it was okay. It wasn't bad. But then I read the original pilot. I was like, this original pilot is so much better than what they made this other thing. The main character isn't as bored, you know.
Yeah.
It's just like all these things that they want to put people into these archetypes. And
I think what happens again, like, you know, you have a lot of people in the chain of decision making. This is once you start making, and again, sometimes this goes to money. It's like once you ask 10 other friends to pitch in on your thing, they feel the right to have a editorial perspective.
Unless
because they're like, I paid money to help make this happen. I don't want that to happen.
Unless you're
my
like,
wife hates that thing. Take it out.
Unless you're like the showrunner. Like for example, Broad City.
Yeah, right,
Broad City.
Right.
They had a showrunner, I think, for their first or second seasons, but then they didn't have one. They basically run that show.
Right.
It's their creation. And and Teachers, which is also a great show. Mm-hmm. They are all producers on it. The writers and actors are all producers on it. And I think that those shows, because they're on different networks, they're not on like the huge like NBC, ABC, but they're giving more creative freedom.
That's
why I love a lot of shows on FX.
Yeah,
you know,
AMC,
you know, all these other things taking more risks.
Oh yeah, I think it's reality, and I think the web platform for music, for all the arts, but like for music and for you know, like theatrical and for, you know, serial drama and comedy and everything, it's a win. It's an overall win.
Yeah.
A lot of people complain about it. I think it's awesome because I feel like some of our, like, from, I'll just comment on the music thing because that's kind of like where I'm coming from.
Yeah.
I think we have, I think two of our archetypes are just flawed, and there's something in the middle that's sustainable that we should kind of go for.
Mm-hmm.
Archetype one being the Led Zeppelin mega rock star who gets an airplane and like maybe playing guitar isn't worth, I mean, even though you're really good, like, is it worth having your own 747? Is there value in it to that? But I don't know. I'm not going to answer that, but I'm saying like that as a standard of winning is sort of like kind of crazy. And the other side though, also being like a struggling, starving, all I do is play in a little bar, that's all I can do, I think that's also sort of not a good standard. I think the cool thing about our current platforms are you can create a sustainable living for yourself making original music if you're hardworking and creative. And I'm not even going to use the word ultra talented because really it's about connecting with an audience. And that's what the web lets you do. If you're smart, you can connect with an audience.
And also these other people, like musicians that have been writing for other artists for a while.
Oh, yeah.
And now they're coming out, like Ed Sheeran.
Oh,
you know,
yeah,
like,
totally,
like,
yeah.
Like
John Legend was one of those.
And then they're you're coming out as their own and you realize, wow, they were, you know, really talented. They just weren't the one. Because people always attribute.
Yeah.
They always attribute, like, in the movies, whoever you know, they do have an Oscar for best writing, but like most of the time, people don't know the screenwriter of the movie, and they attribute it to the actors that they see in it. Like they get all the credit.
Or maybe the director.
Maybe the director. Thankfully, you know, Jordan Peele, I know, is getting some good stuff for which is
exciting. I'm so happy. I am so happy about that. Haven't seen it yet.
So
I'm like a freaky Key and Peele fan. And I've been following everything, and I knew about like this. I think he was on a forum talking about, like, I knew this was coming for a while. I saw trailers a long time ago. I've actually just been out of the country. I've been busy, so I haven't been able to see it. But
it's,
I am fa- I am so excited.
It's very good. And it has, what I love is it's making this social commentary. Yeah, yeah. I know I've talked about this on my podcast like good. Several times recently. Yes, do it. So,
go, girl.
But I think it's making really good social commentary. Yeah. And he wants to do like a series of four or five horror films that are based on social issues,
yeah.
Which I think is really fascinating. Yeah. And I think it's a risk. It's interesting.
Yeah.
And I've never also had, like I actually jumped up in the theater. I usually don't like horror movies. I'm not a horror movie fan,
okay.
But I went with my friend cause I was like, I really love Jordan Peele. I want to see what this is about. I've never had, like, what I loved is how interactive the audience was. Like,
oh, nice.
I've never heard about people, like, people were clapping when somebody was killed. And it was like, that never happens. Yeah, and you're like, the justice. It's awesome.
Right. I feel like maybe, like, Quentin Tarantino films are the only one of the ones I've seen that. So interestingly, a good friend of mine, well, it's one of my oldest friends, and he and I kind of recently connected through Facebook. He's an author and a screenwriter also. Ryan Liske, he and I went to high school together. He's very talented. That's one of his genres of choice, mm-hmm. is thriller horror kind of stuff. And he said about that film, he was like, you know, he was like, kudos to... because not only is it like it does great justice and pays great homage to the genre.
Mm-hmm.
He's not tone deaf to the genre, I guess. So people who know that, so it's not just like he nails it. He nails it on all the levels. And I'm not I don't know the history of horror that well, but I guess for fans of the genre too, it's like he's hitting on all the right cylinders. Yeah.
Yeah, and it's very cool. I think it was like done really well, so like kudos to him.
Well,
and,
their show got progressively, the production quality of their show was very high. Like I felt.
But that's the thing. What was so good about their show, and that's also why Amy Schumer's show is so good.
Yeah, yeah.
They spent 4 months in the writing room and then 4 months filming.
A lot.
Most shows, even like on networks and stuff, they have like maybe like a week or two to write an episode, and then they film it.
That's always the cycle.
Except for like Netflix shows and Amazon, now Comedy Central has been doing that, and that is why their sketches are so fucking good, because the writing is good.
Yeah, yeah,
the reason Seinfeld was good was because most people spend like 50% of the time working on the writing.
Yeah.
Larry David and Jerry Seinfeld go into Larry David's office and just close the door, and they would write. And they would spend like 80% of their time writing.
Yeah, and that's,
and because the script was so good, that's why that was so successful.
Absolutely, absolutely. So yeah.
That's part of it. But but I also want to ask you, though, about... Yeah, I want to ask you about how you got into music. Was it because there was nothing to do in Indiana?
Oh, my goodness. Actually, music was always in my family. So three of the four of... I'm the oldest of four. Three of four of us are professional musicians. So... That's a pretty interesting fact.
Did you have a family band?
No, I know. Yeah, it sounds like we did, right? Like in the sticks of Indiana. That's how we paid our dues. No, we didn't have a family band. We just grew up, I guess, playing music in church and stuff like that. And then my parents were big music fans, so we had a record player and a cool stereo, and like we just spun. My dad had a giant record collection, and we listened to music all the time. My parents took us to music festivals when we were little. My mom did art and sold it at some of the festivals. She actually met Gilda. They were at Eastern Illinois doing their masters, and saw Gilda Radner like when she was just coming up. And so my parents are also early Saturday Night Live fans, comedy fans.
Did they let you stay up and watch it?
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I was like, I was the
back
kid.
When you couldn't record stuff and watch it later.
There was no, it was programmed, or what do you call it? Time-based TV. Appointment-based TV.
We are so spoiled now. Like with
terribly
that.
Spoiled.
We can get anything at the tip of our fingers.
Anywhere, anytime, on your phone, whatever. Yeah. And it remembers where you were. So I started out playing. My mom had a rule that we all had to play piano, I think for a year or two before we could decide whether to like ditch music. And so we started out all on piano lessons.
Rule.
It was actually pretty good, yeah. So I started out on piano, just like all of us. And some of us went on. My sister Emma and my sister Molly. Molly's a professor at Central Michigan and Michigan State. And my sister Emma runs the second largest orchestra in Chicagoland area. So
what's it called?
I can't pronounce the name correctly, so I'm not going to say it.
It's like this Greek word, and I'm sorry. Sorry, Emma, if you're listening, don't hate me. They went further with piano than I did. I went to trumpet. Which I joke about it. I love trumpet, but it's kind of like, it's a very dumb instrument to me because all the notes are hidden between three valves. Sorry, trumpeters.
Yeah, I was going to say, are trumpeters just going to be pissed about this?
I hope so. Share this. And these are like those late night jokes you get into, which are like you're riding home from a concert with a band. You're in a car for 3 hours. Things come up like your instrument's the dumbest instrument in the band. Stuff like, you know, jokes like this.
Well, it's like people always like rag on bassists.
Exactly. Yeah. So trumpet I played all the way through high school, all the way through marching band. I did all of that. I was always about second chair. I was never first chair. I was always like the second best guy. Played all the way. I went to Wheaton Central High School here in the Chicagoland area. The Belushi brothers went to my high school. And their family house was right around the corner from where I grew up.
That's so cool. I know Rob Belushi, Jim Belushi's son. So he's a cool guy. He does like improv and stuff like that.
Yeah. So my teachers all had both of them. Yeah. My history teacher had both the brothers. I heard obviously funny stories about that. Went on to college and I'm like, man, this trumpet is just not working out at campfire parties. I'm telling you, just not the same.
You just wanted to be cool.
I will admit, I read a book called Hammer of the Gods about Led Zeppelin and I was like, now that is music. And I was kind of, you know, coming to my own and picked up a guitar and I just, that was it. I went freakazoid into guitar. I probably practiced 6 to 8 hours a day for a good five years. So
that's why you're so good. Yeah. So if you want to get that good, just practice 6 to 8. Like, it's practice. I have a theory that most guys that get into comedy or get into like guitar playing or just doing it to like get girls. Like,
you know what? That's probably not false completely. There's a, like, if it's on a continuum, that is probably, or if we were looking at like a Venn diagram of all the things that made, you know, you that's probably somewhere in there. Yeah. I was a pretty like smart, geeky, small, tiny kid. Like, I was a runner. I was very like, you know, I wasn't like a football player or anything like that. I'm sure if I'm honest with myself that was one of the motivations somewhere to impress girls for sure. Of course.
I used to have a joke about how you can tell with the guys like in his 20s or in his 30s, because if you go over to a guy's house and he's in his 20s, like, he'll try to play Wonderwall for you. No, because that's the only song he knows how to play.
I know. It's funny. I'm actually a professional guitar player, and I don't have a single guitar hanging in my house right now. But I do also have two studios, so that's where they are. But
Didn't you play guitar at one of the Guitar Heroes?
Yeah, I did. I did the guitar for, which one was? Oh, yeah. So Guitar Hero Van Halen, which was one of the first, that's when they started breaking off and being like, let's get the actual bands, you know, Rockstar Games was big enough that they could pay for the catalog. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so they're going to go after like rock, like guitar-y kind of bands. They did Van Halen, Guitar Hero, and obviously the tracks on the game are Eddie Van Halen, because that's the whole thing. But they needed, Eddie's like absolutely unavailable to do things like, hey, Eddie, can you play like little riffs for like the intro? Or, hey, we're going to do a huge ad campaign. Eddie Van Halen's the, like, no. So they're like, okay, we need someone that can play. It has to be Eddie Van, it has to sound like Eddie Van Halen. Has to be that, but it also can't be a specific Eddie Van Halen riff. Like, it can't be a song.
It's got to be similar, but it can't be
It's got to be exactly, like, it's got to be the exact same style, it's got to be the exact same tone.
How did you get that gig?
But it can't be, I won't say the number, but that was still to this day, that was the most per note I've ever made in my life.
You break it up per note?
In my head, I did. I'm saying that sarcastically. I mean, I was only in the studio for a very short time. So, I had a friend who was working for the ad agency that, did all the stuff for Rockstar Games. They also made, like, the Burger King King and all that. Mm-hmm. So they're all, you know, it was Crispin Porter and Bogusky, that's the name of it. And kind of a forward-thinking ad agency. They're based in Boulder. I was living in Colorado at the time. He and I had played music together. He's like, I need somebody that can do this, and I know you can. So I had one day. I sat home and churned through everything I knew about Eddie Van Halen stuff and went into the studio and in 1 hour knocked out, like, just a boatload of tracks, and The best part about this story is that Eddie Van Halen had to approve of everything before. So I'm literally Eddie Van Halen approved.
That's you should have a stamp on your website that says Eddie Van Halen approved.
Yeah, right. I'm truthfully Eddie Van Halen. And that serves me well, and sometimes it hasn't. Actually, when I was younger, I tried to fit all of the notes into every song because I was practicing so much. And I've since learned to have more restraint and really play the songs. But yeah, that's true. That's a true story. That's one of my bigger highlights of my career.
That's pretty cool. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Eddie Van Halen approved right here on Sleeping with Sarah.
So you lived in Colorado for a little bit.
Yeah.
Weed wasn't legal there yet, though, right?
I don't think it was. I don't think that stopped anyone from doing it.
We're going to do whatever we want.
Yeah, Colorado's such an... If you've lived in a big city, like I've lived in Manhattan, I've lived in Chicago. I'm used to these late night kind of like all the kind of like crazy stuff starts happening in the late hours. You go to dinner late, and I feel like all these... My best conversations are like so late in the evening with my friends and stuff.
Yeah.
Colorado's interesting. Maybe it's changed, but when I lived there, I moved from playing here where I played gigs. I would play a wedding until maybe midnight, 12:30. And then I would go downtown and I would play at another place that we would play until 4 a.m.
Yeah.
And then that means I would get home and be at 5 a.m. You know what I mean? And if I wanted to get food or something, I was up until 6 a.m. So that was sort of like my regular weekend schedule. You get to Colorado, everyone gets up. It's the healthiest state. Everyone gets up very early. They do like mountain activities. It's actually better. It's like a much better quality of life. But, you know, you're out there like they're hiking, you do stuff. Basically, people get dinner early. They have a couple microbrews, smoke weed, and go to bed by 10 p.m. Like, that's literally how it felt.
I feel like LA is a little like that. Like, even the comedy scene, like, the bars close at 2 a.m.
Yeah.
And like, there are like after parties and other places people will go, but they most of the time people. And I think it's also because TV is on a different schedule, too.
Yeah.
Because if it's anything live, it has to be in
Eastern time.
So it has to be sent over. Mm-hmm. And so, like, there's some of that. But
there's some funny stories. I think it's Mark Maron's podcast talks about, speaking of after parties, apparently Sam Kinison had this, like, rager house in the 80s. And, like, his podcast, I'm sure a lot of your listeners check that one out, too. He's got some hilarious, unbelievable stories about what it was like back in the day because lots of comedians would kind of live in the same apartment, you know?
Yeah, actually, yeah. Told me about some of that. Like, he'd live in an apartment complex with a lot. And so, actually, there's still some comedians I know today that live in the same area, an apartment. I'm like, I want to live in that apartment complex so that you can be around that creative energy.
Right. And then somehow, I don't know, you'd have to listen about it. Somehow Sam Kinison is like the godfather of this apartment. He might have owned the apartment complex at one point. I don't really know. He was just sort of like this insane person. The stories are pretty crazy, but yeah.
But yeah, I feel like Colorado on a mountain is like the perfect place to like do mushrooms.
it's so gorgeous. I was where I lived. I had 22 trailheads within like 2 miles of my house. I had a dog. I would go like
trailhead.
This is the Midwest. Free Midwestern. Yeah, trailhead is the beginning of a trail. So we, you know, Boulder and is what you call it at the kind of what they call the foothills. You're at the base of all the fun stuff. So you hit the trailhead and then you hike up and go all over the place and. Oh my goodness! So very quickly I got a hang of the local vibe. I mean, I would go see bands like the Motet play for free at Northern Sun and Southern Sun, these like little pizza joints. Now these bands are like touring. Pretty Lights is a huge DJ live music act out of that area. You'd see him just like DJ downstairs at a place for free. It was a wonderful time. I do miss Colorado a lot, and now when I visit, things are different. Mm-hmm. And let's just say I don't think they really care about what's in your bag when you fly home.
Yeah. Like I'm
just gonna say that.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's cool. Like, I feel like I don't know. I feel like a lot of creative people are very chill, like musicians, comedians are all very chill about that. Like it's almost expected. It's a social thing. Like I don't smoke cigarettes, but like
smoke
weed, comedians. That's like how you're like, hey, I got some weed to smoke. Like we,
it's pretty universal. And you know, yeah. And it's nice to have the stigma not there of Trump's, you know, like, oh no, we gotta, you know, it's like,
well, like in California right now, like it's legal to have it. They're not gonna sell it legally, I think, until January, but it's like legal to be there. And I got to go there after it was legal. So it's like, cool. So it's like, oh, I'm here. I can smoke weed legally here. Yeah, this is so nice.
Yeah, they have it down. I mean, we have a dispensary here in Chicago called Moca Modern Cannabis, and it's right down the street from my house. Mm-hmm. But Illinois has some of the most strict laws.
And I'm so mad. Narcolepsy is not on that list.
How can it not be?
I don't know. There's only like two strains that are for narcolepsy, but they have it, and I can't wait to try it. Yeah. But narcolepsy is not on their list, unfortunately.
Yeah, they might edit it. They might expand it.
We'll see. But it's. Who cares? Like, I do it anyways. I'm not worried about anybody arresting me.
Yeah.
Because I never have more than the amount that would just get a ticket.
Yeah.
Like, here's just a ticket. Yeah. They're not going to, feds aren't going to go for me. I don't think so. Another quick question for you. Yeah. Like, do you find, I ask about relationships a little bit in this podcast. Do you find it hard to keep a relationship because you're more late night schedule, or do you find...
So interesting. So for the longest time, absolutely. Definitely lost a marriage over it. I was married.
I forgot you were married.
Oh yeah, dude.
I remember.
So many times. So many things. I've lived a lot of lives. I've lived several lifetimes. I had a college professor say that when I was young, and he said that was another lifetime, and I never understood what that meant. And now I'm like, oh, I totally get it. Yeah. Yeah. I was, definitely screwed up my marriage. That was not good. I think if you have two things can happen. Either one, you can adjust your kind of work. Like there's a lot of people who work in film and maybe do stand up and stuff. Who kind of evolved from the late night to like into the writing area and stuff where you're still absolutely part of, or like for instance, working for a studio, you know, maybe as a producer, I can, you know, a lot of producers work pretty normal hours and work on massive records. So, and maybe in their own right are amazing musicians.
So, or maybe you get to the success level where you can,
make those choices. And I mean, I luckily have been able to make those choices for myself to, I have this really great opportunity to play with a band called Vibe right now. So I'm taking that, and that is a late night one, but almost everything now in my life has changed a little bit to accommodate relationships because, they are important to me. And, but yes, it is difficult unless you're with someone who also is in the same scene, or maybe has a job that fits with it, you know, maybe someone who works overnights and hospitals, things like that. So, but it can be a strain. Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I think it's a challenge. I think you do that weighing of like, do I give up my career and my path? Mm-hmm. It's a tough math to have to do, and you don't want to do it, but like you kind of, it does. There are things that happen late at night that are crucial, like it's right time, right place, right time kind of stuff.
Yeah, and this is part of the reason why I've definitely been very hesitant towards like falling in love, because it's like I'm so focused on what I'm doing. I'm too selfish right now. I want to be, I don't want to feel guilty about going out late because of somebody else that I care about.
Yeah.
So I just choose to do this thing and just not care about people. Let me take that back. There are some people I kind of see, but like, and I do care about them, but they know that comedy's more important.
Right.
It will always be more important.
Right.
And I just need someone that understands that hierarchy.
Yeah, sure.
Which makes me sound kind of shitty, but I think I'm being less of a shitty person.
No, because you're honest. You're self-aware.
Instead of bringing somebody into a situation where I could potentially hurt them or neglect the relationship, I'm just... Like, I'm just telling it like it is. Like, you're never going to be more important than comedy. I feel like an asshole by saying that, but I think that this is a very un-asshole statement. I'm just being honest.
I'll tell you a worse way to do it. Do it the way I did. The worst way to do it is kind of feel that way in your heart and then get married. That's the worst way. That's what I did. So learn from me. Don't do that. Be honest from the get-go. I remember thinking to myself, like, oh, I only have one real mistress and his music or whatever. And it actually turned out to be totally true. And I probably should have read full disclosure at the time, but I thought I could juggle it all.
If only our muses that we actually have were physical, then it'd be easier to explain that to a person. Really be would. Like, really I've been cheating on you, but it's been with music, baby. It's just notes and scores. It's not an actual woman, but it's right. music.
Right. Yeah, speaking, I want to plug my festival really quick.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask, yeah, but because you've got this festival coming up, this upcoming weekend.
That's right. Yeah. So I'll just tell you the quick genesis of it is that, you know, there are a lot of arts programs that are facing defunding with their current administration, which is very, very shocking for a lot of us who worked in this area and who have benefited from the funding, you know.
Because the funding's been around for, like, forever.
I mean, I grew up, like, when I think about, like, the wonderful programming I grew up with as a child, and now I have a child of my own, like, the thought of a loss of public broadcasting is just scares the crap out of me. Mm-hmm. I don't know what that's like. Because to me, that's, like, kind of this untainted by commercialism, you know, and I feel like for art to really, art in its truest form is a unbridled emotion that's not influenced by external factors like, you know, ads and commercialism and branding and all this kind of stuff. Like, if we were to get really philosophical about it, so that's a dear, dear, dear cause to my heart is like the National Endowment for the Arts, and I'm like a lot of other people was getting very upset, and I'm still very upset about a lot of things. But I felt that the best thing I could do is to try to make positive change and use this kind of time to get everybody together to do positive things to balance out against what's going on. So we created a music festival called Winter Camp. And apropos, we're in the middle of a snowstorm here at the end of March, or middle of March, so kind of fits. Mm-hmm. Winter Camp celebrates the last weekend of winter, and it's 2 days long. There's 17 bands that perform. We have a wonderful light show both nights from BioLoon Productions. We have several vendors on site selling different pieces of art. We have two radio stations that are there collecting donations. All the proceeds go to the National Endowment for the Arts. It's at the Logan Square Auditorium, March 17th and March 18th. People can go to wintercampfest.com to check out, buy tickets if they want. It's just something, you know, this is definitely a passion project. And also a way for me to bring together all of the great art and music in Chicago. I mean, this is a great city. This city is... I feel like the music scene, like, if you look at like Chance the Rapper, for instance, who won all of these awards this year. I mean, this is like a guy in his young 20s who is completely independent and like won all of the biggest awards in the music industry, made his own festival. I mean, there's so many great things coming from Chicago, and happy to fit into that in some way.
That's awesome. Where is it?
It's at the Logan Square Auditorium, which is in Logan Square, like right literally by the...
It's in the square.
Yeah, of Logan Square. It's right above Lula Cafe, so some people might not know where it is. It's a beautiful old ballroom. I think the capacity is around 750.
Yeah. And what time are the shows?
So, the Friday show begins, like, doors open at 7 and mm-hmm. goes until the end of the night. And then there's after stuff happening at the Owl if people want to go out
later.
Like,
until 2 a.m.?
Yep. So, on the Friday, it goes basically 7 to 2-ish. And then Saturday, we start even earlier. We start at 5. And we go to closer to 3-ish. In the morning, and we have food from Carnival, the Latin fusion restaurant, and then both nights, if people want to keep going, the Owl's right around the corner, and there are like official after party spots. So we are really excited, and this is my production company called Inside Straight Productions.
Are you going to be playing at it?
I am actually playing, of course.
I mean, why throw your own festival if you're not going to be able to play at it?
Yeah, so my main band Bifunkel, we're doing kind of two cool tweaks. We're doing the first Friday. We're playing. With a group called Origin of Animal, which mm-hmm. is a group that flexes up to 20 pieces. Ooh. We're called Chicago's only metal Baroque fusion band. We have kind of all the wildest instrumentation, and it's just this awesome cast of revolving characters of some of the best bands in Chicago. So they took on a project this year called Origin of X. So they take their you know, mass and play the music of another band. So we reorchestrated all of our songs for the 20 pieces.
Ooh, that's awesome.
So we're
getting, a lot of work.
Oh, it's been a lot of work. I mean, seriously, this is the story of my life. I dream huge. I dream big and then realize that there's not enough hours in the day. And that's why you had to go back to our very earlier conversation. That's why I don't sleep so much. But so to hear our music being played by, like, you know, like little guitar lines that I wrote being played by an entire horn section or
really
a cello.
Cool.
I mean, it's really cool. So we're doing that one on Friday. On Saturday, we're doing a thing called Bifunkel and Friends, where it's the two of us and then we bring people on stage. Including my sister and Charles Otto and Andy Taylor. And we're going to be playing some really classic songs. So those are my main things. And then I'm also playing with a band called Johnny Derp, which is a really fun little side project that we created originally with the drummer from Umphrey's McGee named Chris Myers.
He's going to be there too, yeah.
He won't. We have Jonathan Marks sitting in because Chris is a very, very busy guy. So what we'll do is it's my boy Elroy, myself, Ryan Tedder, and then the drummer this time is Jonathan Marks, who plays in a band called Hey Champ and a bunch of other. He's a phenomenal guy. So that band is this like hidden secret band where it started out as it's called Johnny Derp instead of Johnny Depp, you know, it's a joke. It started out as all of these funny jokes that my boy Elroy and I have because we're like brothers. And it would be those kind of jokes like, oh, wouldn't it be funny if we did this with a song? Or wait, this title or that title.
Yeah.
And then an opportunity arose for us to do an after show. And we're like, let's do it. Let's call Chris. Let's actually do it. And then so our songs are part, they're humorous, but they're really awesome songs. Mm-hmm. And our ongoing joke is every show is our last show. Like we come out of retirement for our, so
that's funny.
Each show is better than the last show.
That's awesome. That's really cool.
So yeah, so that's my involvement. Other than that, I'm just running around with a chicken with my head cut off, making sure we get everybody on and off. And
that's cool, man.
Yeah. So it's been I'm happy this year. I'm a little exhausted, but I couldn't be happier.
Creative fulfilled.
I am creative. Yes. And to everybody that's wanting to. You know, it's a lot of trial and error. It's a lot of trial and error finding your stream in the creative arts, and it's going to evolve. And you know, there's nothing wasted.
You're gonna have multiple lives that you've lived.
Yeah, and nothing is wasted. This is one thing. As my mom said this, but it's absolutely true. I've thought to myself, I've complained about having to learn songs for some wedding I had to play, and but guess what? Somehow later in life that. I'm playing the basement with, you know, the drummer from Isaiah Sharkey's band, and someone offers us $100 to play a song. And it happens to be a song that I did like 5 years ago with it, and I know it. So it's like nothing, you know, and you can comment on it. So I don't know. I just think you just have to have the right perspective and keep working hard and following your dream, and the dreams evolve and they open up, you know.
Well, that goes perfectly into my next question, but this near the end of the podcast, I always ask people, kind of sleep-based, we talked a little about sleep stuff.
Yeah.
What are your dreams for the future for yourself?
Oh, great. Okay, these are good ones. Yeah, so I was on 7 planes in 10 days, so I spent a lot of time charting out my future.
Mm-hmm.
And half of the time that never happens, but it's fun to do that. My dream, one of my big dreams is to own property, not anywhere near Chicago, but probably on a Spanish island. That is a dream of mine as a writer's retreat, as a just, you know, maybe my family could go there if they wanted to, brother, sister, whoever. Mm-hmm. These Spanish islands are not Ibiza, not like
not the party one.
Yeah, not the ones where like everyone's on ecstasy all the time. But there's some other islands, Menorca, and the Canary Islands, that are just so calm. It's like a little false utopia.
Yeah.
You go there and you can truly unplug from everything, and it's incredibly inexpensive. And like the thought of having a small piece of land on the sea on an island for less than a condo here in Chicago is like, you know. So honestly, that's one of the things I'm thinking about a lot. I want to move more into, I really want to move more into production. So I thrive on new things.
Me too.
One of the things, and I love touring, but touring also is very financially expensive, and the time, what it does to relationships, what it does to everything is a little difficult. For me to be involved in a production sense where I'm helping bring new work to light is something that I really look forward to doing in the future. So those are kind of on a broad level, more in the production level. I will always be performing, and then I want a place on a Spanish island. If you want the big dream,
yeah, that's awesome. So you, but the purpose is to get away and write new stuff.
That's right, absolutely.
Like,
absolutely.
So it's always feeding your creativity.
Absolutely, no. That's it, and that's completely it. Yeah. And to continue traveling, I love to travel. I'm a freak. I am a strange person because I am obsessed.
I love having strange people in my bed.
Well, unfortunately, this obsession is just, I fetishize airline mile points. So this is kind of, you can't really sexualize that one. Yeah, I have like a I have an inordinate amount of pleasure out of getting like free flights and stuff. It's crazy. Like, it's the one weird like gamification thing that I get into. I will do things like buy specific Christmas presents for people because they give me like a kickback on my own. I don't know if I'm a terrible person for that, but like I just love it. I don't know. It's my own little guilty pleasure.
To get mileage. Cool.
It's weird. Yeah.
Oh, that sounds awesome, man, though. I hope you get to travel more places.
Yeah.
And you build your stuff and you get your island.
Hey, man. It's going to happen. It's going to happen.
And thanks so much for coming to the podcast.
All right, Sarah. Thanks for having me.
You guys, I'm really by saying goodnight, everybody.
Oh, good night. Off to sleep.
Thanks for listening to Sleeping with Sarah, where I slept with Jesse Kreiderman. Remember to check out Jesse's festival, wintercampfest.com. That's at the Logan Square Auditorium this Friday, March 17th, and Saturday, March 18th. This podcast is part of the Laugh Factory Podcast Network. Please remember to subscribe and rate and review on iTunes, iHeartRadio, and SoundCloud. We're brought to you by audible.com. Please go to audibletrial.com/sleepingwithsarah. I'm releasing a new podcast each week. Be sure to tune in to find out who I have in bed with me next. Thanks to Josh Bryant for the music. You can find out more on sleepingwithsarah.com. And please follow me on Twitter at Sarah Albritton. Until next time, good night. Sleeping with Sarah.